Thank you so much again for coming to the show.
Can I and just introduce myself first? That's usually what I do first.
Thank you. Yes.
Tagwe dituno kena diatiano daka dira Claudia Foxtree Yeraman and Yukiyaki Guiana daka und auch Deutsch Mutterlich Zeit kawaii daka iaha. So my first language is German, and I even said that in my opening statement. And I am learning my tribal language, which happens to be a Taino variation of my tribal language. And in that language, I said, greetings. My name's Claudia Foxtree. By the way, I use she, her. And that my lineage comes from the island we know as Juriman in the Caribbean. And that I'm a council member for the Guania tribal community. So I want to acknowledge that I am doing this interview on colonized land that was originally lived on by indigenous people, including the Pawtucket, the Penacook, the Agawam, and the Massachusetts that I know of so far.
Thank you so much, Claudia. And as soon as you began, I realized you were speaking Deutsch. I did my grad school in Würzburg, Bavaria. Thank you so much again. Coming back to our question, Claudia, think, how do you define cultural appreciation?
Well, I use the definitions from someone who I really respect. She basically wrote the book on cultural appropriation and includes those kinds of things in her book. Her name is Susan Scafaldi, and she wrote a cultural appreciation book. She's a lawyer. So I just want to say that it's not just my definition. That's what I'm really getting at here. All kinds of sources to sort of think about what is cultural appropriation and what is cultural appreciation. And appreciation is things like going to theater performances by other cultures, reading books about other cultures, buying art from other cultures. It is the kinds of things that we do with art and literature, and those are totally appropriate, knowing what people have created and buying them for fair market value, you know, for lack of a better way of saying it.
So that definition takes me to my second question, which is when someone shows initial interest and then goes on to get into the cultural appropriation side, there's a very thin line and then that is broken so often. How would you define cultural appropriation?
So I am not the expert, and I don't think there's like a cultural appropriation police to be able to say what is and what isn't. You know, you might call it a thin line. Mm-hmm. There's a line, but I'm not the person to call the line. People from the culture, and that can be very specific. Like saying something from the indigenous culture is different than saying, well, if you're Dene or you're Blackfoot or you're Seminole, right? If you're looking at the specific nations, they might have a totally different line for something that's from their tradition. You know, somebody who is from a religious institution might make calls about their religion, but it probably isn't right. It definitely isn't right for someone who is Catholic to make a call on what is and what isn't appropriation when it has to do with the Torah. So I bring in those kinds of metaphors and examples because they help explain something that's kind of complicated with something that's not complicated at all. Right. So I wouldn't do a Eucharist in my classroom because that is something that is done in a Catholic church. And so there's a difference between these kinds of appreciations, appropriations that also has to do with time and place and whose thing it is that they're appropriating and that group's definition. Having said that, I'm not the expert. which is what that was all about, is that cultural appropriation has a component of power in it. So it is when one culture has a lot more power, it's often the dominant culture. Here in the United States, we would say the white European, often male, often heterosexual, dominant culture. So it's when a culture with power takes that another culture's intellectual property or traditional knowledge or cultural expressions or artifacts without permission, without regard, that's like the first step of cultural appropriation. What really becomes problematic is when it gets repackaged and defined by the dominant culture so that the culture of origin no longer has a connection with it, as in it is now sold and marketed without a knowledge of where it actually originally came from.
Right. Right. Thank you, Claudia, because I remember I lived in Canada for a while and I saw so many indigenous things, you know, being sold by not the tribe, not the First Nations, by people who were like just churning out products like that and, you know, making profit out of it. So my first understanding of appropriation goes back to Canada, actually. And this question I had in mind was, what is the exact terminology we should use for, you know, First Nation or Indigenous tribe, or like what would you say will be the right term to use?
The best term to use is the name of the nation. So if we're talking about totem poles or clan poles, we would be talking about whichever nation, the Kwakiutl, the Tlingit, you know, whichever nation it is. If we're talking about the nation who greeted the pilgrims, we'd say the Wampanoag. In the beginning, when there was first contact, everybody used the specific nation. You arrived somewhere from Europe and you had less power than the people who were here in these lands, at least in the beginning. And so you learned what they did for survival and you knew exactly who they were.
Right.
So the best is the specific name. It's the difference of saying the Korean, Japanese, and Chinese and Asian, right? Using the specific name is the best.
Right.
Canada does use First Nations and we've used all kinds of words. And in my 30 years of having these kinds of conversations and writing and doing this work, I have started with, I'm just going to use First Nations in my writing, or I'm just going to use Indigenous people in my writing. However, everything, all those words, there's two things I keep in my mind. One is they're all problematic. Indigenous people are larger than just the North and South American continent. In fact, there are Indigenous people, might be an Indigenous person from another place that comes here, who's still an Indigenous person, right? So people come here and they're Indigenous, even if they're not Indigenous to this land. And there's Indigenous people all over the world. So that word's problematic, right? Native is problematic because anybody born here is considered native to here. American is problematic because we're just talking about from 1776-ish, right? And Indian is problematic, mostly because it wasn't what we called ourselves. And it was a slur or morphed word that was originally used probably in Dios, which means in God, not about India, because India was not called India in 1492. So the word got attached much later. And there are generations of older folks, the elders, who prefer to use Indian and feel like, why should we give up that word? That other group wasn't using the word, right? So it's very complicated, and I'm always learning more about it. So the word's problematic. All those words, right? Any combination of those are problematic in terms of describing the people. So I tend to say, I'm going to be talking about Indigenous people, and here's a map. All the people here in what we now call North and South America. Having said that, I've changed how I do it in my writing and talking. I now interchange every word. Partly I use American Indian, Native American, indigenous. I use them differently because in the United States, the laws use all those different words. So currently we're hearing indigenous people because of the Indigenous People's Day, the Don't Use Columbus Day, Use Indigenous People Day. So that's what's in the law.
Yeah.
But it's been other things in the law.
Right.
And I wouldn't want somebody with power to say, oh, there's no more Native Americans, so I guess this law doesn't apply to you. Oh, there's no more American Indians, then I guess this, you know, freedom of religion law doesn't apply to you. So I purposely now use all the words to say, we are talking about all these people that you've identified in different ways in this legal system. I'll add one more piece to that, which is the problem with the word Indian isn't 1492. The problem is that the Wampanoag, the Dene, the Cherokee were sent to Native American boarding schools in an effort to erase their identity. And that's where they started being called Indian. And so the problem is that that word was used to erase their tribal heritage.
Right. Oh, wow. This is so informative. I had no clue. And I recently introduced myself as an Indian because I am an Indian coming from India. And I absolutely had no, and to a First Nation elder. So it happened recently. So I was introducing myself to people and then I had to explain it a little bit more that I come from India. Anyway, my next question to you was, if a non-Indigenous person wants to borrow elements from your culture, what questions should they first ask themselves?
Why do you want to borrow them? And do you have anything in your own culture that is equal? So a lot of people will say, you know, I love the connection with nature or the earth. But if you go far enough in your own heritage, there probably is a group that has that connection with nature and earth. So, you know, why are you borrowing it? Clearly, if you're borrowing it because you want to make money from it, that's going to be problematic. If you're borrowing it because you want to talk about it, then it's like anything else we could say we're borrowing. I'm borrowing a line from this book, but I'm going to cite it and I'm going to give credit to the people and the person who wrote it. So, you know, why are you borrowing it and what's the context of borrowing? Because giving credit is a big piece of it. The other thing is, using it in the way that it's meant to be used, not some other way. So here is an example. I'm going to say a word. I want you to imagine what this word means. It's an Indigenous word that a lot of people think of it not as an Indigenous thing. So here's the word: Winnebago.
Winnebago.
Did you think of the Ho-Chunk people from the Great Lakes area? Because that's who they are. They lived in the past. They live in the present. They have many, many industries. Right. Or did you think of a huge recreational vehicle?
Right.
So a Winnebago has been appropriated and used in a way that is no longer even connected to the original people. That is the extreme problem, harmfulness of what can happen with appropriation.
I see. Wow. Yes. I can see that. So what would you say some of the, you know, what are some of the sacred elements in your culture that shouldn't be adapted or you shouldn't even be asking permission to use?
You know, every tribal nation is a little different, is a lot different. They're all a lot different. And they are going to have different lines of what that would be. So I can tell you in general, my experiences meeting people from other nations and having these kinds of conversations, and I'm not a spiritual elder or anything like that to be able to really say what the definitive, what's sacred, what's not. But talking to other people, some folks, mask making is very traditional in their culture and they would not want you to in school make masks. I know regalia is very sacred to many people. And so not only would making regalia and on your own be problematic, but deciding to make it out of, say, brown grocery bags and say it's regalia is problematic. Some cultures, some tribal nations have hats, totem poles, certain kinds of images that they use in their jewelry making or painting, and those would be considered sacred, that you wouldn't use it out of the context of understanding what it means in the tribe. There could be foods, there could be particular herbs or medicine. I'm just not knowledgeable enough across nations to be able to say what they are, but each nation would have its own thing. I know masks have come up and clothing has come up in schools. You know, everybody can make a pouch, but making a medicine pouch is an indigenous thing. You know, what you put in that pouch and how mm-hmm. you think about it is a traditional native teaching, not necessarily Western European teaching.
Right. Can you, Claudia, like I just told you about this inauguration that happened in Wayland Police Station, and I was invited to attend the inauguration of the badge. That was because it depicted our local tribe. Can you share a story of a time when someone from outside your culture showed appreciation for your culture in a way that made you feel good? And can you share why you felt good?
Once in a while, I am in a situation where I might be sharing a song or a story or even a spiritual practice in a small group. And one of the ways I know that people appreciate it, and by small, I mean not a public thing, but invited guests. And this is a big difference in this conversation of cultural appropriation. When you're invited to another culture, that's different than going to it and taking things and doing things outside of that invitation. So if I invite people and then I share things, they participate in the moment that we're doing it. So they might do the ceremony, they might join in the song, but they don't take that then and teach it or do it or own it or sell it. Or they know which things they can share. Like if the song is on a CD and anybody can buy it and they've learned it through me, that's different than if it's a sacred or special song that they do only when we're together, right? So they know the difference. So they know their own privilege. Right. They know their own line of what is okay to take and what's not okay to take out and what to do with it. And so to me, that piece of appreciation is that they're participating with me. Now, I would guess that in some Indian ceremonies, the mendi would be in that. Like if you were invited to participate in it, that might be different than doing it mm-hmm. out of the context of a wedding.
Right. So, Claudia, how do non-Indigenous people show up for Indigenous people? How do we show up for you? I know this sounds very, it can go deep, but...
It's a lot bigger than cultural appropriation. I mean, that's just a small part of the problem.
Yes.
And cultural appropriation is harmful because it's one of the extensions of centuries of racism, genocide, and oppression. This is not somebody being offended that you're doing it. It is something related to being, yet again, oppressed by somebody doing it. And the context is that Indigenous Native people never migrated to somewhere else in the world. It isn't like you're going to find a whole bunch of Wampanoag people in the middle of Germany, right? There was no mass migration. So Indigenous people are still here on their original lands of what we know as North and South America. And so when small aspects of the culture and traditions are appropriated or stereotyped, and that is all that you see, there's nowhere else in the world where the accurate information is, if not here. And the history, culture, right. artists, musicians, authors who are Native American here in this country are almost invisible. The visibility is the little pieces that are stereotyped. And so the context of this is the only place it needs to be and should be is where allies and people who want to support Indigenous people comes in. That we need the voices lifted of the people whose land we're on. We're on somebody else's land whose stories are misrepresented, misunderstood, and have been totally formed through a dominant narrative instead of the people talking for themselves. So that piece of visibility is the best thing that our allies can do.
Acknowledging it, which brings me to the question of land acknowledgement statement that is being read in so many committees and organization. I wanted to ask you, what do you think it feels right now? Does it feel performative? Does it feel valuable?
I think it can be performative. Let me say that but with the right intonation here. It can be performative and it shouldn't. So I have heard it be performative. Yes. You know, this is whose land we're on. I do workshops on it, and that's not where we want to be. A sign in your building maybe could be performative. This building sits on Wampanoag land. Maybe you could say more, but that'd be the closest to like that's okay performative that I would get. Was you've got a static sign. If it is a human being,
yeah,
I get two things I want to say. First of all, we shouldn't expect if we're in a place where Indigenous people are hosting that they're going to do a tribal land acknowledgement, because we don't invite people in our home and say, no. Let me tell you, this is my home, because you've just come and you know it's their home, right? So Indigenous people, I don't have that expectation for. People who are colonizers, which actually includes me because my nation's not from the land where I'm standing, need to recognize that they are on someone else's land and that those people are still alive. And by saying that, it's not enough. What have you learned about that group? Or what have you learned about Native issues and causes? Or what have you learned now that's different than the last time you stood there to talk about what a land acknowledgement was? And in that way, you up the ante in terms of I'm doing a tribal land acknowledgement and I'm raising the visibility by telling you something about Indigenous people. Then it becomes real. Then it becomes you're trying to be an ally and have a relationship. If you have a relationship with a local Native group, that's really ultimately the purpose of having a tribal land acknowledgement, to show that you're going to be learning through the people whose land you're actually on. And until that point, you can still be learning and share your knowledge and reduce the misinformation that's out there about the people who you're talking about. So I have been doing that with the nations whose land that I'm on. And so I can tell you that Nipmuc means freshwater fishing place, that Massachusetts means large hill place or at the Great Hill, that Agawam means marsh or low-lying lands, that Pawtucket means at the bend in the tidal river, right? So anything that adds visibility to what has been invisible for centuries and therefore part of racism, genocide, and oppression.
No, I think this work is very much needed then. And it's not just that. I mean, we have to How do you impart this education? We are talking here on a radio podcast, but Claudia, you're doing workshops, you're trying to bring people, you know, make them aware. But what about interpersonal work? Personally, I was asking myself, how do I stop myself from appropriating when I'm clearly coming from a place of appreciation? If I come from a place of initial interest and appreciation,
my favorite way to learn things is through interpersonal relationships. So my favorite way is meeting people, forming friendships, developing relationships. You go out and you do stuff together and you learn and see stuff. So almost all of my relationships are cross-racial, partly because even if I have friends who are white, that's still cross-racial, but I have people of color cross-racially as well. That's my favorite way. I will tell you that in the recent research that EchoHawk, I think, and Illuminative, several different places have done research. Some of the statistics that come up with is that 65% of the population has never interacted with a Native Indigenous person. That's a huge part of the population that knows nothing. And here on the East Coast, the percentage is probably higher because we don't have big reservations. Places that have big reservations at least know there's Indigenous people, and there's more of likelihood you'd interact at a store or whatever. But that doesn't happen here. So it's harder to make those relationships. I just want to honor and recognize that it is harder to make that. Again, going back to Susan Scafidi, who wrote Who Owns Culture, Appropriation, and Authenticity in American Law, she talks about how you might think about when it's, whether it is appropriation or whether it's not appropriation, that's going to be harmful. So it might be appropriation if the original people are forced to stop or reduce what their own cultural practice because it's replaced with an appropriated version. Right? So if they're forced to reduce it or stop it, like spicy burritos becoming less spicy, so now people who are actually Mexican can't sell their spicy burritos because nobody wants them anymore, right? I'm just saying an example. It might be appropriation if the original culture is legislated against when they do it. So Native Americans didn't have freedom of religion until 1978. So if you were out there doing things that you were Native American spirituality and not being in trouble with it, but Native people couldn't freely practice it, then it might be appropriation.
Right. Absolutely.
The original people, this is the third and last one, are in danger of being harmed or killed if they're practicing, like wearing a hijab or something like that, then it might be appropriation if you're doing it. So, you know, those three things, if they're forced to stop, if it's legislated against, or if the original people's in danger of being killed, those are obvious places where it might be appropriation. If I were talking about Native people, specifically the problem is, and there's nowhere else in the world where they're able to practice or do it. It's not like, it's like if it's not happening here, there's no place else and it's correct.
True that. Do you find yourself when you see something being culturally appropriated? The today's world is a bite-sized content world, and I've seen so many videos on how people want to correct people and, like, you know. But my question is, when you are feeling a little bit irked, offended, when you see your culture being appropriated, do you voice it?
It depends on the situation. I mean, I think that people of color, people who have been oppressed, reserve the right of when they're going to say something about what's happening to them. You know, I mean, in general, I don't think I'd ever shut up if I really pointed out everything all day long. But also, I am an educator. So if it's an appropriate situation, I don't have a problem explaining it. And I have strategies, you know, how I do that. So if it's a complete stranger, maybe I want to practice one of my strategies. If it's a complete stranger, maybe I'm like, I got to go pick up the kids, so I'm not dealing with this right now. I don't tend to make jokes or laugh about it because that's not the kind of person I am. So I'll either educate or won't deal with it if it's a safe environment. I mean, if it's some kind of a unsafe situation, absolutely not. You know, it's never been 100% that made anything happen. And so changing one person's mind or exposing them to a new idea that they hadn't thought about isn't going to make a difference in that moment. So once you make the decision, then explaining might make sense. I will add, for Native people and some of the things we're talking about, there's actually laws that protect Indigenous people. The Native American Arts and Crafts Act, for example, you can't sell something and say it's Native American when it's actually not Native American. That's illegal. And so,
Okay, I didn't know about this.
I mean, it existed to do this kind of protection for Indigenous people. And so there are some laws that, Indigenous people are the most legislated people in this country, if you go back to everything. And one of them, more recently, I think it was 1994, that particular one, was there to help Indigenous people so that you couldn't get your cheap knockoffs and disrupt the folks who that was their form of ink.
Has there been an incident or anything that you know that has the cultural appropriation has caused harm that you personally know that?
You know, the first thing, there's probably other ones, but the first thing that that comes to mind, other than what I've already said, like paper bags versus the real meaning of what regalia and clothing is sage, burning sage. A lot of folks have picked that up as a way to cleanse the air and that kind of thing. So the harm is that if you go collecting sage to use for your non-Indigenous purposes, whether that's selling it or using it, and then there's no sage available for Indigenous people to actually do their ceremonies, that's harmful. And I work with the Massachusetts Center for Native American Awareness, MCNAA.org. And they have gotten, people have reached out to them and say, you know, I operate a store and we have lots of sage. And we've been thinking about how this really belongs to Indigenous people. And can we donate it to the organization, for example? So that is like all what you've been talking about in a package, how it can be harmful and how you can be an ally and where you can go.
Yep. Thank you so much on that. And I am the one who has just picked up saying, did you sage your house? Like, I don't know anything about it, but my friend just recently bought a house and I said, did you sage it? To me, I didn't even know the history of this, but that's my ignorance.
Well, I think of it as, it's not I'm offended, it's I'm being further oppressed. So is it something that I'm feeling oppressed about? Probably not in that particular moment. In the big picture, are Indigenous people oppressed? Yes, because then they don't have the access to it and it's not being used within the context. But saying things like that come out of your mouth because it's in the popular culture or even in the historical language, like calling everything a costume when a costume is what you wear when you pretend to be someone, not when you actually are that group and you're wearing regalia or traditional dress. I just kind of make an assumption as soon as it comes out of my mouth, I'm like, everything probably has a racist origin unless proven otherwise. So then I go and I Google it. You know, I don't even have to go to libraries. I can just like look it up and see if there's a history. And that's part of my self-learning of where did that expression come from? Because I'm going to assume it's problematic until I learn otherwise.
Absolutely. Oh my goodness. Yes, Claudia. And as an educator, have you felt the need of bringing this into a curriculum, teaching the kids from?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
These reminders.
I mean, I teach these kinds of things, and I think there are individual teachers across every building in the Commonwealth that understand the importance of teaching about culture and racism and sexism and heterosexism. I mean, they bring in information so that students learn it. As a curriculum, I mean, Massachusetts just passed something that says you have to teach about genocide. That's been, you know, 500 years in the making. So it's turning a big ship is really hard. It takes a long time, but slowly we chip away at it. And while individual teachers may be doing it, it certainly is easier if there's a government mandate that you now will teach K-12 curriculum that includes blank, blank, and blank. We just haven't got, we don't even have one that says you teach about Native Americans and that's whose land we're on. And that's the country we're living in.
Yeah.
Well, I think people need to just learn more. So reading books or attending workshops or lectures or, you know, however you get your information, that's one main thing we can all do. But I think that what I want to leave you with is thinking about when is it not appropriation? Besides the appreciation part, it's not appropriation, again, according to other people, not just me, is if it doesn't damage the original culture and it actually raises up the voices of the original people. So if there's a television show or a movie that's produced by non-Indigenous people, but is bringing a story to light and maybe even profits are going to help the nation, then that is different. Because it's not, if it's not damaging and it's raising the voices or the offering some financial stability to the original group, then it might not be appropriation. And I'm going to emphasize again, I am not the decider and arbiter of what is and is not. I just have these guiding things that I think of as I work. You know, does it oppress and deny people, or does it raise up their culture and voices?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much, Claudia. This was perfect. I got to learn so much.
So Seneca Kakona is abundant blessings, a home. Thank you.